page of the Tanya. The Bava Tanya writes, and he wrote the cover page himself.
Rabbi Vinaitovich, July 16th.
That the whole book,
Tanya, Thursday.
Based on the pasuk in Nitzavim, Ki Karo Ve'Lecha Hadavar Ma'od. The Torah is very close to us. It's very accessible to us. B'picha uvolvavcha lasoso, in your mouth and in your heart. And the Tanya says, what is the purpose of this sefer? Levayer heitev, to explain very clearly, heichu karav ma'od, how is the Torah accessible to us? How is it karav ma'od? B'derech arucha k'tzara, there are longer paths and shorter paths, but ultimately it is accessible. So he is mirroring that language in Perek Mem Vav by saying it's karav hadavar ma'od. And again, if you remember B'kitzer, the way he talked about awakening the hidden love that is already in your heart. So it's not a question of acquiring some new characteristic. It is a question of simply revealing and exposing that which is already there. And the idea that he brings out, you'll remember, is the pasuk in Mishle, Kamayim hapanim opanim, as water reflects the face that you show the water, Kein leif ha'adam bi'adam. Right? So the heart of a human being will reflect. Right? You smile at the water, you get a smiling face. You frown at the water, you get a frowning face. So too in human relationships, the pasuk is saying, that when we show love towards another human being, we get back love. In other words, I will tend to mirror or mimic that which is shown me. So the Bava Tanya says, if this is true, in the much less intense love that a human being shows another human being, how much more so when we become aware of the tremendous love that Hashem shows us, it will arouse within our hearts a tremendous love for Hashem. And he says this is the easiest way, so to speak, of having Avas Hashem. And then he talked about different ideas, some of them with digressions, but they're significant digressions. Asher kiddushanu b'mitzvosav. This is all in Perek Mem Vav. God has sanctified us with his commandments, but kiddushanu is also a lashon of marriage or betrothal, like kiddushin, that we become like the spouse of Hashem. He takes us unto him as a wife, and that is why in Shir HaShirim, the metaphor is always used of the love between a woman and a man as the metaphor or the mashal for the love that Hashem has for the Jewish people. It is specifically defined as a romantic, intimate attachment. And then he talked about the fact, again, I guess maybe we'll start, and this is Daf Samach Vav. It says, V'kachahu, the latter third of the page, V'kachahu b'chol nefesh mi'Yisrael, this is the characteristic of every Jewish soul, b'shas esek ha'Torah v'hamitzvos, that when we are learning Torah or doing mitzvos, our soul is literally bound up with the Almighty. In the same chibur, the same relationship of a husband and a wife during marital intimacy. Ulechein chivu chazal lokum v'lamait b'pnei kol osek b'mitzvah. There actually is a din. I mean, we tend not to follow it consistently, that when one is doing a mitzvah, I have to stand up in honor of a person doing a mitzvah. The Gemara says the mucker for this was the mitzvah of Bikurim. That when communities would bring the first fruits to Yerushalayim and they would walk by, so the Mishnah says that the artisans who were working would stand up and greet them. And why do you stand up? Because these are people going to do a mitzvah. I think I mentioned to you that Rav Soloveitchik said that is the makor of why we stand up for a chassan. Everybody says because the chassan is like a melech, right? The chassan is daino lemelech. But there's a problem because until the marriage, he's not a melech yet. Chassan is not a melech the day before or before the chuppah. If anything, we ought to stand up according to that logic, after the chuppah. And then people are, they dance, but they're not so makbid that they have to stand up after the chuppah. But the Rav Soloveitchik says that the reason why we stand up for a chassan is we're mechabed a person who is about to do a mitzvah. That the chassan is about to do a mitzvah of marriage. There is a machlokas. There is a machlokas if marriage is a mitzvah. That actually is a machlokas. The Rambam actually writes that kiddushin itself is a mitzvah. What's the mitzvah? Ki yikach ish isha. Now, the truth of the matter is, if you look at the pasuk in its context, it actually is not an imperative at all. If anything, it's a mitzvah for gershin. I mean, the pasuk, what does the pasuk say? When a man takes a woman, and behold, she does not find favor in his eyes because of la safe reasons. So get is a mitzvah, actually. Now, I don't mean to say, God forbid, it's a mitzvah to divorce your wife. But if one wants to dissolve a marriage, one is fulfilling, just like shechita, if you want to eat meat, you are doing a mitzvah saseh by writing a get. It is in the minyan hamitzvahs. There's a discussion, why don't you make a bracha on a get? Right? Why don't you share kiddushanup mitzvos b'tzivanu lichtov get, lasseis get? You know, we don't do that. But there is a machlokas. The Rambam does say kiddushin itself is a mitzvah. Others say, no, kiddushin is not a mitzvah. There's a mitzvah of pru or vu. There's a mitzvah to have children, and kiddushin might be the way that you're allowed to have children if premarital relations are forbidden, which is another issue. But the Rav wants to say that according to the Rambam's opinion that kiddushin is a maisa mitzvah, we stand up for the chassan because the chassan is going to do a mitzvah.
Does the Rambam count this among the Torah?
The Rambam does, yeah. The Rambam counts it as Tayyab Mitzvah.
So he counts separately Kiddushin and separately
Pruvu, yeah. Absolutely, yeah.
Not Nesuim, I mean, only one mitzvah.
Yes, yeah, a mitzvah to be married. Now, the truth is, Chazal do say there's a mitzvah to be married even if you don't have children, but even if you can't have children. But when they say mitzvah, that lashon does not automatically connote that it's one of the 613 mitzvahs. In fact, it might be for other reasons that a person has a sexual yetzer hara, whatever it is, it's good to be married. In other words, mitzvah does not translate into one of the 613 mitzvahs. But he says, therefore, af imhu bor v'yam aretz. Right? This is a very powerful idea that we have to honor a person when he's doing a mitzvah, even if he's a bor in Hebrew means the same thing as in English, and an amaretz, a totally ignorant person, a person of not lack of refinement, when he's doing a mitzvah, he has transformed himself into a holy entity that is connected and makusher and reflective of the glory of Hashem. So I stand up, because he is now godly at that moment. V'hainu, mipnei Hashem, Hashochein umislabesh benafsho bishazu. Hashem is dwelling, and Hashem is enveloped within his nefesh, within this person's nefesh, at the time that he's doing a mitzvah. Even if this boar doesn't have any particular kavanah, rak she'ein nafsho margashas, his own nefesh does not feel consciously the presence of Hashem. Because of the curtain, the veil of the physical matter, shalom nistachech, that has not been purified, umachshich einei hanefesh, and it darkens the eyes of the soul, so the soul's eyes cannot perceive the godliness that is within him. Meros elokim kamoa avos. In other words, he's not able to perceive God the way the avos perceived him. Chiyetu b'hem shero elamam b'chayehim. See, this is an interesting expression. The Baal HaTanya is Derech Agav. You know, there is a phrase Chazal say that one of the brachos that Talmidei Chachamim used to give each other when they would finish the zman and they'd go home after the learning sessions says, "Hi ratzon shetira eilamcha b'chayecha, may you see your world in your lifetime." So what is the meaning? May you see your world in your lifetime. So what he's expressing it is the following. In Eilam Haba, our neshamos will feel connected to the presence of Hashem. In this world, because of our averos, even though we're connected to Hashem when we're doing mitzvahs, we don't have that awareness. So when you see your world, b'chayecha, that means that in this physical world, you will have the awareness of being connected to Hashem, just as you have it in Olam Haba. As what?
The lights.
I mean the ava of the light. It would be similar to that idea. Now you see the other way around. Sometimes this is phrased as a negative because we talk about the idea that a person doesn't want to get his reward in this world for his mitzvahs. You know, there's the opposite way. In other words, to tell a person, may you get your olam haba in this world, is sometimes seen as a curse. But in this meaning, it basically means, may you have the perception of your connection to Hashem as you will have in olam haba. V'zeh she'amar Asaf beruach HaKadosh. Right, Asaf is one of the Levium, who is credited as an author of Shir Mizmor LeYosef, has several Tehillim. He's one of the Levium that sang in the Beis HaMikdash and composed Tehillim. That Asaf said, Beruach HaKadosh, B'yad Kenol Knesset Yisrael. And even though it's written as a first person singular, he is speaking with Ruach HaKodesh on behalf of the Jewish people in Golos, even though he wrote it, obviously, when there was a Beis HaMikdash. Ani bar v'lo eida. That's a pasuk. Ani bar, I am a foolish, animal-like person. V'lo eida, I know nothing. Behamos hayisi imach, I was like an animal with you. And then Hashem responds, or the person says, Ani tamid imach, I am always with you. So the interpretation is that when I do a mitzvah, I am with Hashem, but I have the lack of awareness of an animal. Kolomar, sha'afal pi shani kebehema, biyosi imach v'lo eda. I am like an animal, even though I'm with you, and I'm not even aware of my connection. V'lo argish benafshi, I do not feel in my nefesh, yichud zeh, shetipul alei masuf afakat techila. Right, this is what you said, Ron. In other words, if I would be aware of the presence of God, then the first response would be fear, trepidation, and awe. And being generated from that fear, trepidation, awe, and reverence would be the tremendous, overpowering love of delight, which would then come. O kirishveyesh. It would come up like sparks of fire. Kemidas tzaddikim. This is how tzaddikim function. Again, remember when the Baal Tanya says tzaddikim, he actually means a very specialized definition, because in his definition in Tanya, even the most righteous person, by and large, is a benoni because he's functioning on the level of struggle. The tzaddik means the person who has so perfected himself that he no longer has the yetzer hara. So there's no mesach hamavdil. There is no curtain. There is no veil. And consequently, he has this constant awareness of being engulfed by the Shechina. So he says, Shedasu lashon hargasha benefesh. See, again, the notion of knowing God, das. So people say the biblical know, right? As we find, that's what he says, that it says, Adam yada eschava ishte. Adam knew his wife. It's a euphemism for marital relations. But what he's saying is, the word das does not just mean I know something. I know something in my mind as an abstract proposition. But das is hargasha benefesh. Das is feeling something at the deepest emotional level of the soul. And that is why the connection of husband and wife at its highest level is called das. So he says, when the tzaddik knows God, that doesn't mean that tzaddik knows God. It means that tzaddik feels the presence of Hashem in a very powerful emotional way, coming from his intellectual meditation and the like. But because the tzaddik does not have what is called the mesach hamavdil, the curtain and the veil, there is no blockage. There is no blockage, and therefore one takes it all in. And this is kolel. That feeling includes chesed and gevura. So chesed is when I feel God's kindness, that awakens love. And gevura is when I contemplate God's might, that awakens the awe and the reverence. And that is why the tzaddik, who has this undivided connection to Hashem, is going to have a mix of awe and reverence and fear and trepidation and joyous love. Because das is a midah that does include both the chesed and the gevura. So what Asaf is saying is, we don't have any of that. We are like a bar of a loeda, like a behema. Nevertheless, we need to know at the same time, ani tamid imach, I am still with the Almighty. Ki ein hachomer monea Yichud HaNefesh Bior Ein Seif Baruch Hu. The Chaymer, right? The Chaymer is the physicality of my being. It may, in other words, what he's saying is, Chaymer or Averis, all of these things, they take away awareness, but they don't take away connection. Now this is something that, on a purely rational level, we don't necessarily understand, because we tend to think, if I'm not aware of being connected to God, then I'm not connected to God. I mean, my connection, we would think, lies in my conscious awareness. What he's saying is that's not true. He says, even if our eyes are blind, even if we're not aware, even if we don't know, even if we don't feel, the connection is there. That's what the pasuk is saying. That even when I am like a behema, ani tamid imach, I am always with you. The presence of God is always in my heart. Now, although one thing I'm not entirely clear of is that in part of the perek, he seemed to be saying, this is true when I'm doing a mitzvah. Now it seems to be saying that it's always true. I'm not sure. In other words, because before the analysis was that when a person is doing a mitzvah, his soul is makushar, his soul is tied and bound to the Or Ein Sof. The Or Ein Sof is the name for Hashem that we're using here, the light of that which is without limit, that which is infinite. Right? Hashem is called the Ein Sof, without limit, and the Or Ein Sof is the light emanating from the Ein Sof, which is my connection to Hashem. The notion, by the way, the term of Ein Sof for that Kabbalah uses for Hashem is actually a philosophical term. It's an interesting overlap with philosophy and Kabbalah. In fact, was it the Marshal actually once said? The Marshal wrote that Kabbalah and philosophy are just two ways of it. He didn't like Kabbalah, he didn't like philosophy, so he actually said it as a negative. But he said they're just two ways of talking about the same thing, and he actually wrote the Ramah. The Ramah, I don't want to say he was an amateur, but Kabbalah was not his specialty, the Ramah, but the Ramah sporadically got involved in Kabbalah in various ways and in philosophy. And the Marshal, who is kind of the senior, chaver of the Ramah, he was a senior, he criticized the Ramah for being involved in this, and he told the Ramah that you ought to spend more time on dictum. Because he had some tainas and some grammatical errors. He says, that would be more worthwhile. But the term Ein Sof actually emanates from the Rambam's discussion. The Rambam, in the Mori Nevuchim, basically has a famous idea called the idea of the negative attributes of God. And that is, he says, there is no way that God's essence can be described. He says, any attribute in the Torah, Hashem is Racham, Hashem is Chanun, are not describing the essential essence of God. In other words, when we say a person is compassionate, we mean a person has certain feelings, internal states. He says, we cannot describe the internal states of God because the internal states of God have no parallel to human experience. So we can only describe behaviors. So Rachum does not mean God feels mercy. We don't know. We can't even analyze Hashem on the level of feeling. But it means behaviorally we perceive in the world behaviors that are indicative of rachamim had they been done by a human being. So the Rambam says all adjectives describing God are describing behavioral manifestations of God. They are not describing the emotive or the affective states. And the Rambam says the only description we can have of God is negative attributes. We could say God is not material. God is not multiplicity. God is not duality, etc. In other words, you can say what God is not because what he's not corresponds to human experiences. We know what being finite is. We know what dying is. We know what being material is. So I can take all the things I know and I can say Hashem is not one of them, because I'm taking what I know and saying this is not it. But you can't say what Hashem is. So that's actually picked up in the term Ein Sof. In other words, God is described as that which is without limit, meaning it's a negative attribute, that human beings have, or matter, has Sof. Hashem is an Ein Sof. Right? You can only describe it in that particular way. That's even a question. The Rambam even says this, interestingly enough, in the Seder of Davening, Yishtabach, right? So in Baruch Hashem we say, Melech Kel Chei Ha'olamim. So there's actually a machlokas if the girsa in the Siddur is chay olamim, which we actually say sometimes, but the Rambam has a problem with chay olamim or chay olamim. Now, chay olamim means he lives for eternity. Chay olamim. It is a description of an attribute of God. God lives for eternity. Chay olamim means he is the life of the worlds. He infuses the worlds. Olamim does not mean eternity. Chay olamim. So in other words, if it's chay olamim, olamim means forever. Chay olamim, olamim means the worlds or the universe. Chay, he infuses them with life. So the Rambam says you can't really say.
Chay is a noun.
Chayim shel. Chayim shel. Life of.
But doesn't Rashi say something on chay paro? And Yosef said something, Chay Paro, to the brother.
Chay Paro, yeah.
Chay Paro. So Rashi makes that, right. Says it there or something.
No, they're, well, they're Chay. Chay is the Chayim Shel, the life of.
There it says Chay Paro.
I think it says Chay Paro, yeah.
Not Chay. Yeah. I remember the Rashi.
Yeah. So the Rambam says that we can describe God as giving life to the universe because that's a behavioral manifestation that we perceive. We perceive ourselves as alive. We perceive the world as alive. So I could say Hashem is the source of that life. But we can't really describe God as living because the nature of God living is not commensurate with our living. In other words, that would imply we live for 120 years, God lives forever. But that wouldn't be the same because that would suggest that our life and God's life are the same, except God lives longer. And the Rambam says you can't define Hashem in that way. Yeah.
So the term himself comes from early philosophers. It doesn't have a basis in...
No, it does have a basis in Kabbalah, but the point is that many of the Mekubalim themselves were philosophers.
In Chazal
No, Ein Sof is not in Chazal. Ein Sof is in... Well, it's in the Zohar. It depends how early you put it. If you put the Zohar to Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, it would be Chazal, but it's not in the Talmud or the Medrash.
Okay.
So, again, you have to understand, I mean, the Marshall's point is actually 100% correct. I mean, there actually was not such a big difference between philosophy and mysticism. There was a tremendous overlap. And just as there was not a big difference between philosophy and science. I mean, the notion that science and philosophy are two different endeavors from Aristotle's perspective. In fact, science was called, the old term for science was natural philosophy. That's actually what science was called. There was no division that science was facts and philosophy were theory. I mean, you know, there people had philosophical theories. And the MS is, with modern physics, you're actually going back to that. It's very, very fascinating that modern physics is a combination of mysticism and philosophy. And, yeah, sometimes you hear a physicist talking about string theory and... matter having, you know, 32 dimensions or whatever it is, but some of them are squeezed together. You know, they're using terms that really are Kabbalah. I mean, they don't correspond to anything you could perceive with your senses or with your rational mind. So a lot of the things that got separated are coming together again in different ways. But Kabbalah and philosophy were very much joined together with science. I knew a fellow. Dr. Rakas, that's all. Maybe some of you, if you're from Chicago, you may have heard of him. He's not alive anymore, but he was the chairman of the. He was a Moroccan Jew, a Sephardic Jew, and he was the chairman of the physics department at the University of Illinois. And he used to give a lot of shiurim, very very popular shiurim in Chicago, Chumash and Hashkafa. So he told me once that he was visiting a yeshiva from a Kabbalim in Yerushalayim, and they asked him what he did, and he said he's a physicist. They asked him what he worked on, so he talked about crystals. So they asked him to describe his work, and he described his work, and they said, oh, so that's where you're up to, okay. He says, that's good. Okay. So he says, Afal pichein, ani tamidimach, ki ein hachomer moneya. Again, I go back to this idea all the time, that remember that the Bala Tanya was written to comfort Hasidim who came to him with many, many questions. In fact, remember that he said that people are asking me all sorts of questions and I can't answer everybody in person? So this is a manual that's designed to give people the FAQs, right? The frequently answered, frequently asked questions. And the question that he brings over and over again is that people feel far from Hashem. They feel distant. They don't feel connected. They don't feel the light of Hashem in their souls. And the message is, the light is always there. You may not feel it. You may not know it. You may not be aware of it. But it's there. And that itself can create awareness within a person. When a person is aware. In fact, that's the whole thesis. That when I become aware of what is here, then the love becomes open and exposed. So he says, "Afopichen ani tamidimach ki ein hachomer monea." The chomer, my corporality, my materiality, does not hold back yichud hanefesh, the unity of my soul, be or ein sof, in the light of the infinite Baruch Hu, hamamale kol almin, that fills all the worlds. Uchmasha kasuv, and that is another meaning of a pasuk in Tehillim, gam chayshech. See, again, these asides are always interesting. It says, Gam chayshech lo yachshech mimeka. So that means that darkness does not create darkness for Hashem, right? That's what it says. So what he's explaining is, that means the darkness in my soul, because my eyes don't perceive Hashem, does not prevent Hashem from being connected to me in that way. Ubazeh yuvan, and with this we can understand, Chomer onesh iser malacha b'shabbosais v'chametz b'pesach hasheva l'chol nefesh. Right, we know that if one violates the prohibitions of Shabbos or eating chametz on Pesach, hasheva l'chol nefesh. This applies to everybody. So no matter who you are, Hashem has a very severe punishment for these sins. So he says the following: L'fi sha'af b'nefesh bor v'yam aretz gomor. Even a boor and a totally ignorant person, Meir or Kedusha Shabbos, there is a special holiness. See, it's interesting, what he's pointing out is that the punishment of the Avera is commensurate to the God, to the godliness in one's soul. And on Shabbos and Yom Tov, one has the extra light of Hashem. So when you violate the Shabbos, you're making filthy, so to speak, that light of Hashem that is within your soul. And that is why it is so chamor, because it is a desecration of the holiness of the soul. And therefore, nidan b'nafsho b'kare suskila, there is death in the hands of heaven, there is stoning, al chilul kedusha zu. Mashehu chamet o tiltol muktza, even the smallest amount of chamet, right? This is the halacha. Again, he's not going into the halachic issue here. We know that the halacha we paskin, that unlike other prohibitions that are nullified in 60, right, a drop of milk is batel in 60 times the meat, a chametz is one of the exceptions, that chametz that gets mixed in, at least during Pesach, is not nullified, even if it's one part in 10,000, even a mashahu of chametz. But again, he's not discussing the halachas. The truth of the matter is that that's not a doraisa, that's a drabanan. And there actually is the opinion of the She'iltas, one of the early Gaonim, that we do paskin chametz batel b'shishim. So you actually find sometimes lahalacha. Lahalacha, if you have a lot of other reasons, people rely on the She'iltas. But he's not going into the halacha. He's just saying, even a little bit of chametz, or even moving muktza, which is actually is also a drabanan, right? So maybe he's merames in his lashon that mashehu chametz is drabanan and moving muktza is drabanan. But even these rabbinic violations, pogein, it creates a defect in the holiness that is on your soul. And this is the same thing as the holiness of the soul of a tzaddik. In other words, because all of us have this connection to God, ki taira achas l'kulanu, the taira was given to all of us. So you see, again, one should look at this. You know, one can look at this in a negative way. Oh, you know, God is giving me these awesome punishments. But look what the Baal HaTanya is saying. The punishments that Hashem mandates for the Torah is because of the desecration of the holiness of the soul that Hashem has given you. So one has to have that awareness. Now he just says, Umashe kasav, and that which it says in the Pasuk in Tehillim, Bahamos, Lashon Rabin, says Bahamos, which is Behemos, is the normal way it's written. Why the plural? We just say, right, this is the going back to the Pasuk of Asaf, Ani bar v'lo eida, it should have said behema ha'yisa imach. I'm a behema. Why bahamos? Why the lashain rabin? So he brings l'rames, this is a remes to us, Ki lefanav yisbarach, gam bechinas das ha'elyon ha'kailo chesed u'gvura, nidme ke behema. In other words, what he's making the point is that it's really a double behema. First of all, we have no awareness of awe at all, so we're like a behema. But then the Rabbim says, even if the tzaddik who has awareness, but kalape ha'kadosh baruch hu, that awareness is still insignificant. Meaning to say, even if you reach the level of das, that emotional connection to God, which awakens in your heart the feeling of Hashem's chesed and gevura, that still, even the tzaddik, kalape Hashem, is a getter of behema. It's asiya gufanis. It is considered to be physical, legabe or ein saif, as compared to the or ein saif, kamasha kasov. And that is the meaning of kulam b'chachma asisa, that God made everything through his divine wisdom, v'nikra behema rabba, and this is called, okay, again, behema rabba literally means many animals, but he's defining it this way. Behema rabba means the great animal. So what is the meaning of the great animal? That the level of the tzaddik, who is margish Hashem through das, is called the great behema. We who live without awareness, we're called the low animal. The tzaddik who lives with awareness is still behema, but he's called the behema rabba, he's called the great animal. And that's the remez of Bahamos, Yisa Imach, that both levels are levels of behema, kalape the or ain't safe. If a hu shame ben, bigamatria behema. So again, the gematria of behema is what? 47 and 5 is 52. And 52 is the same gematria as ben. Ben here means bina. And again, without, I don't understand all of the associations, but the basic association is, even he who achieves through wisdom and understanding, chachma and bina, he achieves das, emotional connection, even that bina is still gematria behema. So that's the behema rabba. That's called the great behema, versus the lesser behema, meaning even the tzaddik shouldn't feel he's made it. There's infinite levels of progression. Yeah.
So he's saying that all punishments that the Torah mandates are because a person does something negative
to his soul speech. Yeah, that's right. All right, so again, the overall topic of Perek Mem Vav is that the Derech HaYosher Lefnei Ish is the awareness of the love of Hashem. The love that Hashem has for me by attaching himself to me when I do his will. And that should awaken and arouse the hidden love that is within my heart. So Perek Mem Zayin begins.
And the hidden law is something natural that the
that's already
has.
There. That's already there. That's what he's saying. In other words, the whole idea of the Tanya is there is nothing you need to create that love. But there are things you need to do to access that which is already there. Now again, in some ways, this is obviously a mystical construction because, we define emotions like love as based on what we feel. So if a person doesn't feel love, then how can we say there is love? This is almost like a physicalist idea that this love is a thing that is in me, whether I know it or not, and if I can access it, it's there. It's not. In other words, the emotion is not just the conscious awareness of things.
Is this a Kabbalistic concept? Because I found that Rav Kook's Orot Teshuva also wrote something.
Well, Rav Kook. Rav Kook was a very, very devoted non-Chabad. The follower of the Baal HaTanya. Many were. The Baal HaTanya was really learned and studied by many, many people. Misnagdim, Hasidim, it's only in recent decades that it became specifically Lubavitch thing. I mean, he was first Lubavitch Rebbe, that's true, but his teachings were never limited to Chabad. Okay, so now we have Perek Mem Zayin. Hine, behold, b'chol dor v'dor, u'b'chol yom v'yom, in every generation and every day, chayev adam liros atzmo, ki'ilu hu yatza hayayim in Mitzrayim. So this is again is a wonderful interpretation. Right, this is taken from the Haggadah, from the Mishnah. It says every single day, Well, actually, it doesn't say every single day. In other words, he's paraphrasing. The Haggadah says, or the Mishnah says, B'chol dor v'dor, in every single generation, a person must regard himself as if they themselves were taken out of Egypt. Now, there's a big problem what that means exactly. Does that mean I have to make believe that I experienced the Exodus? So here, he's offering another interpretation, a non-literal interpretation, and he's augmenting the Mishnah by saying that it's not just every generation, so to speak, but it's literally every day. And he defines Mitzrayim as the imprisonment of the soul. Because the word Mitzrayim, Netzar, is a narrow, confining place. Like David HaMelech says, Min HaMetzar, Karasika, I called out to God from the narrow, confining place. So he says...
He's not original on that. That was the before Midrashim and so on.
Well, I don't think there's any. I don't think there's a Midrash that says this point. It may have been earlier Mekubalim. I don't know if he is the first one.
No.
Question: he claimed. I mean, the Baal HaTanya claims, although it's some gizma, that nothing he says here is original. That he says this whole thing is Malukats, Mipis. I mean, what's the name of the sacred? Likutei Amarim, an anthology of sayings of other people. The same thing is true, by the way, the Maseilas Yesharim, Moshe Chaim Lutzato. Writes in his Maseilas Yesharim, he says, there's absolutely nothing new that I'm saying in this Sefer. He says, these are all obvious things, but he says, the obvious things people tend to forget, so they have to be restated. Okay, so he says, B'chol dor v'dor, b'chol yom v'yom, chayav adam liros atzma, gilu hu yatsa hayom min Mitzrayim. Again, he's adding a little bit of a paraphrase. It's not only I have to feel as if I was taken out of Egypt, but every single day I have to feel that today I have been taken out of Egypt. What does that mean? Yitzias nefesh elokis mimaser haguf. That God is allowing your godly soul to emerge from the imprisonment of the body. Mishcha dechivya, again a phrase from the Zohar, Mishcha dechivya, the skin of the snake. The snake is the symbol of evil and bad and separation from God. And the body is described as I'm imprisoned in the skin of the snake. Lichlal, and by freeing myself, I can be included and connected, be yichud, with unity, to the Or Ein Sof Baruch Hu, to the light of the infinite, al yidei esek haTorah vaMitzvos bichlal ubifrat. Oh, I'm sorry. Bichlal, in other words, the mechanisms that give me my freedom are Torah and Mitzvos, as a general rule, ubifrat bekabalas malchus shamayim, and especially when you accept upon yourself the yoke of Hashem's kingdom, bekriyashma. Shaba umakabel umamshich alav yichudo yisparach beferish biyamro Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. Again, he's making a subtle pointer as always. He's saying there is a process here of freeing my soul by allowing it to feel connected to the light of the Ein Sof. So Torah and mitzvahs generally do that, but he says, when you accept upon yourself the kingdom of Hashem in Kriya Shema and the unity of God, when you say Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, what does that do for you? So he goes on, Kamash Kasafti Liel Ki Elokeinu, when we say Hashem is our God, that means what? We, as individuals, have a unique relationship with Hashem. The same way Hashem is Elokei Avraham, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov, Hashem is Elokeinu. We have a unique relationship with Him. And what happens, therefore, is, why is God called the God of Avraham? Because Avraham totally nullified his individuality to be included in the Yichud of the Or Ein Sof. Avraham was Zeiche because of his righteousness, V'hiluchu b'kadosh Madrega L'Madrega, Kamashkos of Isa Avram, right? The Pasuk says, Avram traveled Haloch v'nasoa, and that's a spiritual journey. We don't have that level. Avalanachnu Yerushu Matana. But Hashem gave us as an inheritance, as a gift, He gave us His Torah. Hilbish Ba Ritzona. Achil Bishba, he dressed within the Torah the concretization of his will. So God's will gets concretized and expressed in the Torah, his wisdom and his will, hamiyuchadim b'marhuso v'yatzmuso, which are reflected of his essence. Right? This is the idea that because God is indivisible, the Rambam says this, God is indivisible, so his will and his essence have to be the same thing. Again, we don't have, this is where philosophy and Kabbalah kind of come together. In a human being, we separate many, many functions. I have a will, and then I have a life, right? My life, my mind has will to do things. The will and the life are two different things. My will and my essence are two different things. My essence generates a will, but the will is something that is separate, meaning even if I were to change my mind, so to speak, that would not change my essence. He says, with Hashem, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a single unity, Hashem's will and Hashem's essence have to be the same. The Rambam writes that we don't understand what that means. But if that's the case, the Torah, which is a concretization and expression of Hashem's will, is also identical to Hashem's essence. So when I connect myself to Hashem's will, I'm connecting myself to the essence, because the essence and the will are indivisible. I know that I'm just saying words, but if you accept the formal syllogism that the will and the essence are indivisible, then connection to the will has to be connection to the essence. In fact, the Rambam even uses this as an answer, it's a philosophical answer, to the question of how we reconcile the idea that Hashem knows the future with free will. Really one of the most famous questions in religious philosophy. That is, on one hand, we believe every human being has the unfettered choice to do good or to do evil. That's called Bechira. The Rambam writes, quite logically, that without Bechira, there would be no justification for reward or punishment. How could God punish me for what I had to do? How could God reward me for what I had to do? Right? So there got to be free will. And yet, it's also axiomatic, right, that Hashem knows what's going to happen. So you're telling me I wake up in the morning, I could decide to daven or not to daven. I could decide to eat kosher or not eat kosher. But how could I make that decision? Hashem knew yesterday, and you know, a million years ago, whether I'm going to eat treif or not. So by the time I wake up in the morning, the choice is not there. Right? This is the famous question. So the answer that the Rambam gives basically is we can't understand it. That's his answer, but he says it in a more elaborate way. He says that since this is a question that pertains to God's knowledge of the future, and God's knowledge has to be indistinguishable from his essence because of the notion of the unity of God, since it is understood we don't know Hashem's essence, it is also understood we don't know Hashem's knowledge. Because if we knew Hashem's knowledge, we would know Hashem's essence, because the indivisibility of Hashem says his essence and his knowledge are the same, unlike a human being whose knowledge and essence are two different things. This is really a fancy way of saying we don't have the answer, but the Rambam is trying to argue this by saying you have to conflate knowledge and essence. So the Rebbe, you could get a sense the Rebbe was very impatient. Was very impatient even reading this explanation. And the Ravid says, if he didn't have an answer to the question, he shouldn't have asked it.
But actually, says, the Rambam, Yodea, how does he say Yodea, Yeda, everything is the same. It's a little bit difficult for a person, because a person is also like that. My psychological being and my physical being is not divided. And if I know more, I act differently. And if I think, and if I have...
They are distinct, because the proof of this is from a person in a coma. The proof of this is that you can take away separate faculties,
right,
and you can still be left with a person on one level or the other.
But it's not the same person anymore.
Well, the life force is still there. You know, say it's not the same person.
Well, okay. Physically.
Well, obviously, a person is a composite of many, many different things.
So this was. But
what I'm saying is, but obviously that means multiplicity. In other words, that's what we're saying. It's a person is not a single, indivisible unity, because in these very examples, what you're doing is you're dividing him up. You can take away vision, and not. In other words, every. You're right. A thing that makes up a total person is a multiplicity of distinct factors.
Right.
Good, but that's multiplicity. That's not single.
A person changes when you take away his sight or his hearing.
Yeah,
he's
but
not
that's
the same
what
anymore.
He's saying is that's in the nature of, you know, if you had three faculties, you take away one. In other words, that's just taking away a faculty. Says,
well,
okay.
It's a little different.
All right, but he says, therefore, when I connect myself to the Torah with Yichud, Ki ilu nasan lanu es atzmo. When he gave us the Torah, he gave us himself. Kamasha kasa b'zayar HaKadosh ala pasuk vayikhu li truma. Again, the Zohar has an ingenious interpretation. Hashem says in building the Mishkan, take, we all translate this as, take for me a donation. So the Zohar HaKadosh says, Li is a direct object, not an indirect object. Vayikhu li does not mean take for me, but take me. By doing my mitzvahs, you've taken me. Actually, they say, too, just on a simple level, that the word mitzvah, I believe it's the Zohar as well, the word mitzvah, which means commandments, the Zohar wants to connect it really to an Aramaic word a little bit, which is tzafsa. Tzafsa is companionship. A mitzvah is that which creates a companionship or a friendship or a relationship between man and God. It's a lashon of tzafsa. The li kolomer oc vavili lemeimer utruma. So really, that he says is the following: the Valatanya, he raises a grammatical question on the Zohar. If vayikhu li means you take God, then truma is the other thing you have to give. You have to give this. So it should have said vayikhu li utruma, because it's two different things. Elam mishum dekul achad. But once again, if the mitzvah and God is one, so it's all one thing. V'zeh sha'amar, and that is what we say in davening.
God in the mitzvah.
God in the mitzvah, because the mitzvah is a concrete expression of his will. So everything is one. You're connecting to Hashem's will, you're connecting to Hashem. Right? The Torah is Hashem's will, mitzvahs are Hashem's will.
So isn't this also a break in the unity of God? When you don't do the mitzvah, then there's something less in God. So I mean,
well,
this is
there's
the same thing as with a person. Of actually, what he says here makes it much more questionable.
Well,
to me, I mean, I don't know. Maybe I don't understand.
You're saying, well, what are you saying? You're saying what? If you do a mitzvah.
If you do a mitzvah,
well he did
you,
say, again, I mean, he said...
If you don't do it, then you kind of, God is losing
well,
out something.
Well, he said before
so God
that
is
when
changing
a,
too?
He said before that when a person desecrates Shabbos and Yom Tov,
yeah.
It says he's pogame, he is creating a pogam, he is creating a defect in the soul that has been infused with God.
But he undermines the unity of God.
Well... You say undermines the unity of God. I mean, if anything, it's the opposite problem. The problem is that if God is everything, you have the problem of what's called the pantheism. This was a major issue with. I'm just not enough of an expert in this, but I mean, the big Taina. One of the big arguments that the Gra had with the Baal HaTanya was the notion of seeing God in every person creates the chas v'shalom, the possibility that you think a person is God. God is in, you know.
But I also see it on the other side. If you take it away, then God is changing. It's both. That God is in every person, that you see God all over.
He's not saying God is changing. What he's saying is you're severing your access to God, meaning to say you can connect or you can disconnect. Mitzvahs, you're connecting.
Of which is in that mitzvah, is suddenly disconnecting from God. So
no, the mitzvah is the mitzvah. The mitzvah is objectively.
Yeah. a reflection of that. But when I don't do it, then...
So when you do it, you connect. Yeah. When you don't do it, you don't connect.
I don't take off.
It's not taking off from God. The mitzvah itself is God, so to speak, because it's an expression of God's will. The mitzvah is God. Your connection to the mitzvah is your connection to God. So that is the meaning. Vatitein lanu Hashem Elokeinu biyava. So again, look how he's translating it. Vatitein lanu, same drasha as the Zohar. Vatitein lanu, you have given us Hashem Elokeinu. You have given us God. In other words, we're saying to Hashem, you have given us yourself. Biyava. Similarly, in the last bracha of Sim Shalom and Shmona Esrei, Bior Panecha Nasata Lanu Hashem Elokeinu. See how he's translating here. With the light of your countenance, you have given us Hashem, our God. Ulazeh Ein Moneya Lanu Midvekus HaNefesh Biyichudo V'Oro. There is nothing that holds us back from cleaving our soul to his unity and to his light. Ela haratza. Okay, so important. And this is not original per se. It says the only thing that holds us back is our own desire. Do we want it? Shem Edom writes a klal, the davkabo. If a person doesn't want, chas v'shalom, and the Baal HaTanya does not want to finish the sentence, he says, etc. Meaning he doesn't even want to say that there could be such a human being. If a person doesn't want, they're not going to have. Aval miyad sheraitze umakabel. But if you want and you accept, umamshich alav elokuso, and you bring upon yourself God's godliness, when you say, Hashem Elokeinu, that's the meaning. Hashem is our God individually, Hashem Echad. Mimela, automatically, your nefesh is included in the overall unity of Hashem. Deruach, I see ruach, your spirit, again, this is just a phrase from the Zohar, your spirit brings down the spirit, v'yamshich ruach, and that is the bechina, that is the level called Yitzias Mitzrayim, when your soul is freed from its enslavement and united with Hashem. Ulachain tiknu parshas yitzias mitzrayim b'shas kriyashma dafka. Again, an interesting observation. You know that kriyashma is, the way we read it, is three parshias. Shema, vayayim shemoa, and vayomer. Now, vayomer is not part of kriyashma. Kriyashma is shema and vayayim shemoa. Actually, d'oraisa might even be less than that, but even rabbinically, kriyashma are two parshias. We read the third parsha for a variety of reasons. One, because of tzitzis, which is a remez to the 613 commandments. But the other is because we fulfill the mitzvah of remembering the Exodus in the day and at night with the parsha of tzitzis. Right? Even the Art Scroll Siddur has an asterisk on the pasuk, Ani Hashem Elokeichem, Asher Hotzeisi Eschem Me'eretz Mitzrayim, that when you say that verse, you should have kavana, because the chatchila mitzvah should have kavana, to fulfill not the mitzvah of kriyashma, but the mitzvah of remembering Yitzias Mitzrayim. In fact, there's a whole shayla, there's a whole interesting shayla. You know, women are exempt from reading the Shema, because Shema is one of those mitzvahs, it's one of those rules. Now, there's so many exceptions. The rule that women are exempt from time-bound commandments is a rule that actually has more exceptions than rules. I mean, there are many, many, numerous exceptions. However, Kriyat Shema happens to be one of those that is covered by the rule. It is a Zman Grama, and women are Pater. Now, the question is this. Kriyat Shema is clearly Zman Grama because you can only, I mean, you're Yotzei the Mitzvah only for the first fourth of the day, etc. But what about Zechiras Yitzias Mitzrayim? Are women obligated to articulate the Exodus every day? See, here's the problem. There is a mitzvah we paskin to do it in the daytime, and there's a mitzvah to do it at night. On the other hand, it is a 24-hour mitzvah, meaning to say there's no time where you don't fulfill the mitzvah. So some say it is called a 24-hour mitzvah, therefore women are obligated. There are others that say no. It's not really 24 hours. Because if you have to do it once twice. In the day so and once separate. At night. So the day mitzvah is limited to the day, and the night mitzvah is limited to the night. So there actually is a machlokas, are women chayavis in this. According to that, even if a woman doesn't say Shema, she should have to say the Parsha of Tzitzis or an equivalent pasuk. Anyway, the Magen Avraham does bring that even if women are paturis from Shema, they should say the first pasuk every day, because that's just a general idea of accepting upon themselves Ol Malchus Shemayim. Now the Baal HaTanya is just pointing out, if Yetzias Mitzrayim and Kriya Shema are two different mitzvahs, why did Chazal in the liturgy specifically put Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim in connection with Shema? I mean, we could have had, like, you know, we could have just said after davening, say a parsha of tzitzis. Why connect it to Shema? His answer is because if you understand that Yetzias Mitzrayim is not just the historical event, but Yetzias Mitzrayim is the freedom of the soul to be united with Hashem, it is the Kriya Shema, which is the mechanism of my freedom, and therefore, it is precisely when I unite my soul to Hashem, by Hashem Elokeinu, that I experience Yetzias Mitzrayim, and that is why he connects it. Afshi mitzvah v'neatzma. The mitzvah of mentioning the Exodus is not the mitzvah of Shema. V'lomi mitzvahs Kriya Shema. It is a separate mitzvah. That's why you find, if you recall, in the Mishnah in Brachos, there is a machlokas. If there's a mitzvah to mention the Exodus at night, everybody says you got to read Shema at night. It's Yitzias Mitzrayim. It's a separate mitzvah. L'man tizkar, k'disa b'gmaru paiskem, el v'neishehein davar echad mamish, v'chein b'seif parshas Yitzias Mitzrayim. And that is why, at the end of the parsha of Tzitzis, Misayim, ani Hashem Elokeichem, I am your God. Personal relationship. Who took you out of Mitzrayim? That's the meaning of this. V'hainu, gam kein, k'moshe kasafti liel. Okay, so a person has to know their Mitzrayim and the fact that Hashem gives them a Yitzias Mitzrayim.
Thank you. Go ahead.